everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are looking back at 34 days on the road. We have never spent that many consecutive nights in our travel trailer, and it was definitely a different experience than a one-week vacation.
Four states and seven campgrounds later, we have some thoughts to share. Listen to hear our reflections about campgrounds and family travel. Will RVFTA become a full-time RVing operation? Stay tuned for the definitive answer.
And we are wrapping up our reports from the road by interviewing Running Bear, one of the co-owners of the Jellystone in Marion, North Carolina. They are doing a lot of things right at this campground, and we will share some things that stood out to us.
And we are delighted to welcome back Go RVing as our RVFTA sponsor. Listen for a special message from them just a bit later in our show. To find your way, head over to GoRVing.com/RVFTA.
Our epic road trip is over, but maybe yours has just begun. And you are listening to episode 46, Reflections from 34 Days on the Road.
Before we head into this week's feature topic, Reflections from 34 Days on the Road, we want to do a quick news roundup, don't we?
Yeah, super quick.
Super quick, because tonight's episode is content rich.
Yeah, we got a lot to cover. So, but we just got back. We, I think, produced four podcasts from the road.
Well, we were gone for 34 days.
Right.
So four or five.
So, right. We did all those from the road, and they were a little bit different.
Yeah, we recorded them from the front storage bin of the travel trailer.
Well, the content was a little different, too, because we were more travel-focused, more location-focused.
Right.
So we know that there may be some concern that we haven't had our campground correspondents on.
Yeah, so we haven't had Carrie Cox and Brett Nielsen on recently.
Favorites of our audience.
And, you know, Carrie went to Yosemite with her family, traveled cross-country, and Brett went up to Glacier.
Yeah.
And we just want you to know, it's not like we haven't had them on because we're, like, jealous of their trips.
Right, and we don't think they're going to show us up.
It's not like we're worried that their summer trips were better than ours.
No.
I mean, Yosemite, Glacier. We went to Great Smoky Mountains National Park. I mean, here on the East Coast and in the Northeast, we have great national parks that we can go to as well.
Yeah, keep telling yourself that, honey. We do. We love our national parks. We love Shenandoah. We love Acadia. We love Great Smokies. But at the same time, we know
Brett's in Utah. He's got five national parks, like, in his state.
But he had to go to Glacier.
He had to go to Glacier. He's like, I'm too good for my Utah national parks.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Glacier, or else he's done all of them.
We're going to also have Carrie on to talk about her trip.
Road trip.
But in the meantime, if you're curious, you can always go over. She's putting up blog posts about
Travels
it.
Travels with Bert.
Yep. As she goes, and we've shared some of them out on our Facebook.
So we're going to have those crazy correspondents back on the show.
Yep, so don't you worry. And then, you know, hopefully we'll have him back again and again and again and more.
And more and more. Maybe more correspondence in the future.
Maybe that's what we have up our sleeve. We always have things up our
sleeve. There's always something up our sleeve.
All right. So then another thing that we have up our sleeve, we have one of those teaser announcements where we can't give you all of the details.
Contractual obligations and all. But listen, this is important. We're going to be at Hershey.
Yes.
Which is like the biggest RV show
on
the planet.
It's America's
largest
RV show.
And we don't have all
the
details yet, but we're going to be working with one of our major partners, and we're going to be there. And we want you to come and say hello and hang out with us. We really, really do. And when we have more information on the times, we will let you know the days we will be there and the partner.
Yeah. So the RV show is from September 16th
to 20th. This is the world's biggest RV show.
Yeah.
At least they say it is. So it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And if you're listening to this and you are going to be there, you're planning
to be
there.
You best come by and say hello.
Hello. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello. You better hang. You better be like, bring your camp chair.
Yeah, last winter when we did
campfire.
Last winter when we did those RV shows, we had some podcast listeners show up, and it was really nice.
Yeah,
it was nice
fun.
To meet people.
And then we've done more and more with those people. Like, they came to our rally. Like, we meet, and it's
yeah.
Nice.
A few of them
it's
are living in the house downstairs,
and
got somebody borrowing
listeners.
The RV next week. But anyway, we'll have more information on Hershey mm-hmm. soon, and you should be planning on going anyway because yeah. Hershey is like rock and roll in terms yeah. of RV shows.
There's
we haven't
like
gone
it.
To Hershey in years.
Mm-hmm.
We only went to Hershey once.
We had it, the pop-up. We were thinking about the travel trailer at
yeah,
that
we were
point.
Thinking, but it's yep. like they say at Hershey that like every make and every model mm-hmm. is there, which I don't know if that's true, but they say that.
It's big.
And we're going to be there.
Is. Another thing that I wanted to mention was we got an email from one of our listeners, Karen, who had used the Compare RV tool. And we got a few of these. You know, we definitely had people tell us on Facebook, in email. Like
right, somebody, I think it was Aaron from Midtown Campground, said, well, I want a vintage trailer.
Yeah.
And that wasn't an option.
Well, no. It told her that she was supposed to have a pop-up. And she said, well, I
no,
have a trailer.
I want a vintage trailer.
And I said, no. It's saw into your soul. Because she is. They're like kind of...
They're outdoorsy.
Of, they're
I mean,
very
for lack
outdoorsy.
Of a better word.
They like the tent.
Yeah.
They do.
And they should like build a campground.
I think they're up to that. It's
Nevada
not
City.
A secret. Yeah.
Summer 2016. In-town campground.
So listener Karen had emailed and she said, it told us that we should get a fifth wheel.
Yeah, and Karen and Bill, who are friends mm-hmm. and podcast listeners,
yeah.
they actually kind of do want to get a fifth wheel.
They
I think
do.
They go back and forth on that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to talk about
I don't think that Karen goes back and forth
oh, she
on
wants,
that.
She's
she
sold
wants
on the fifth
that
wheel.
Fifth wheel. Yeah, Karen and Bill were at our rally with their kids. Such a great, fun, nice family. And we initially met them at an RV show. And when she told me that the Compare RV tool said they should have a
made all the sense
wheel.
In the world.
Yeah,
it
I was,
saw into their souls too.
It did. I was like, yes, because as a family, they love their shorter driving trips. They like to RV.
They RV
frequently.
A lot. They
yes.
they frequent. They
mm-hmm.
take frequent trips, mm-hmm. but they're not going cross country. At least
go
not at the
huge
moment.
Distances.
So that having that fifth wheel with all that space and comfort makes a lot of sense.
And
at least from our perspective. To me, a fifth wheel is not something I want to drag across the country.
No.
Now, somebody out there is listening going, well, I have a fifth wheel and I did that. But
yeah,
it made sense for them.
In general, certain rules people follow
yeah.
for their rigs. But then also, they want very designated sleeping areas. That's always been something that's important. And that's, you know, that's a big thing in a fifth wheel. You can be very
oh, everybody
comfortable.
Can have a bed.
People are at like opposite ends of the basically like the mini house.
Yeah, you have
you
a
know?
Lot of space and a lot of privacy.
Yeah.
We're
going to
do a pros and cons mm-hmm. of a fifth wheel episode at some point, you know, in the next few months.
Yeah. But
we
so it was funny to hear those responses like from different people and to hear people react to what the Compare RV tool,
absolutely.
You know, told
absolutely.
Them that it should have. Okay. And iTunes reviews, I had said last week, we were super appreciative for all the iTunes reviews that were given to us while we were on the road. We hadn't looked at them because we weren't really like hanging out on the computer a lot. And then when we got back, it was like opening a Christmas present. It was so nice.
And we
to
got
read
a few
through.
More Christmas presents this
yeah.
week. We wanted to read one of them.
So, well, I have two because April
okay,
EC wrote loving this podcast and I saw her. She, I think, started following us on Facebook and everything. And she commented a few times and told us about her new fifth wheel. And it's so exciting to see a family sort of embark on this journey.
Right.
So it really
right.
stood out to me. But I
happy
think that
trails.
This is the same April, I would
right.
assume. But I have so enjoyed listening to this podcast. My husband and I are in a similar life stage as Jeremy and Stephanie with two small children, 5 and 2. So we relate a lot to the things they talk about with traveling with kids and camping with kids. I think I've got all caught up in a couple of weeks with all their episodes. They are hilarious and humble as well. We actually bought a fifth wheel and can't wait to start camping with our kids and doing vacations in the RV. We camped before kids, but we haven't camped in 5 years since having kids. This podcast really has me pumped to get back into it.
Yeah, and we get pumped too when we get letters
that's why
like
we
that.
Do this.
I mean, it's so exciting because we remember what it
yes.
was like 5 years ago to be like, oh my God, should we spend this money?
Mm-hmm.
Should we invest our time into doing this? And it's really been transformative for us as a family.
Yeah.
We had another great
yeah.
one
so
by Amy.
Amy Pamsey said, don't listen if you don't want to get into RVing.
I think you need to say that again. again, slow. It's almost like a Motown album title.
Don't listen if you don't want to get into RVing.
That should be the name of our first album.
Do you think we could have somebody do like a remix of that for the beginning?
I like it, Amy Pansy. Yeah, I like your style.
Oh, wow. Just wow. Glad I found this podcast. I have dreamt about RVing with the families, and you guys sell it well. Thought we'd be getting a pop-up camper someday, but now I know I need a travel trailer. Looking for a deal to get one and getting my camping fix, listening to these wonderful people.
And we've said this before. We don't mean to be turning people off to the pop-up camper, but we have been real about our pop-up camper experiences.
What we do is we give facts about pop-ups that people who never RV'd don't
think of. And I think only about 6% of consumers are buying pop-up campers. Like, the pop-up camper's been taking a major hit over the years, and most people are going travel trailer and hybrid. But Amy, thank you for starting your review with oh wow, just wow. Because that's the best first two sentences I've ever read in one of our iTunes reviews.
Right.
So listen, we're going to be back in a second with a message from our sponsor, Go RVing, and then after that, we have a really, really great feature topic for you. Now it's time for a sponsored message from our friends over at Go RVing.
RVing is more affordable than you might think. Head on over to GoRVing.com/RVFTA and click on the affordability tab to find out how RV travel can be more economical than other types of vacations.
They also have valuable information on the ins and outs of buying and renting an RV and how the latest models of RVs are designed to be more fuel efficient.
They even have expert advice on purchasing RV insurance.
While you are there, check out their Vacation Value Generator, where you can compare the cost of a family RV vacation to the cost of other types of family vacations.
Head on over to GoRVing.com/RVFTA to find out just how affordable an RV vacation can be. Find your way. Go RVing.
Now, we used this Vacation Value Generator, did we not?
Yeah, because it's
fun.
We
went on and sampled it. It is actually pretty nifty.
It's like
nifty.
A little game, yeah.
It is almost like a little game for adults, okay? So what you do is you head on over to GoRVing.com/RVFTA.
Yeah.
So they know you're coming from us. And you click on the Affordability tab. Okay, now under the Affordability tab, there's, I think, four different categories. One of them is the Vacation Value Generator. Then you select a type of RV, right? You can pick a Class C, a Class A, a travel trailer, a pop-up. And then you compare a vacation in that type of RV to a traditional vacation that is either driving and renting a hotel, flying, renting a car, and getting a hotel, or flying, renting a car, and renting a house.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
I know.
We haven't done it in a long time. We used to do things like that.
And then you can pick all these sample destinations. So we picked Washington, D.C. to Cape Cod, just because that's kind of in our wheelhouse. And how much do you save if you take a travel trailer to Cape Cod from Washington as opposed to driving and getting a hotel room?
So it gives you actually an itemized list of all the different expenses, like gas and payment on your, you know, car, your motorhome, things like that.
They include everything.
Yeah, so it's really interesting because it gives you that itemized list. It's not just giving you a number and letting you be like, well, I don't know, where are they getting that from? And so it was a difference of about $1,200 between the two. Right.
So the driving and renting a hotel. Do you rent a hotel? No,
you book a hotel.
We don't do hotels, so you rent it or you book it, or you just get an RV and you don't bother with hotels. And these numbers look good to us because it was $3,200 for the driving to the hotel and about $2,000 for the RV vacation. So now we actually calculated the savings when we first bought the pop-up camper. We were always very curious. And for our weekend trips, we always said we were saving 50%, an even higher number than this.
Right. And that, again, has to do with – I always say food is a lot of the times the critical factor in how much you can save on an RV
vacation. Are you cooking every meal in the RV or are you eating out?
Or are you having a real vacation and saying, I'm not cooking, I'm going out and enjoying
obviously,
the
your savings
food.
Are going to drop substantially.
Yeah.
The two main ways you save here. Look, I mean, the secret sauce to saving on an RV vacation is to cook meals in the RV. And it doesn't have to be every single one, but to cook a lot of your meals in the RV. And then, of course, campgrounds are just an awful lot cheaper than hotel rooms. There's
and
no way
activities
around it.
Built in, I think, keep you from spending other types of money.
No, that's
on
a great
vacation.
Point. That is not
that's
baked
not
into
there.
This vacation value generator. But we always say, like, if you're at a hotel, unless you're at some high-end resort, you're not going to have lots of activities packed in, where a good campground is going to have a lot of free stuff built in for the kids. Mm-hmm. All right, so check out the vacation value generator, goRVing.com/RVFTA. We'll be back in a second with our feature topic. Thirty-four nights, seven campgrounds, and four states. We learned a lot, did we not?
I think that we learned a lot, but we also just thought a lot.
We thought a lot.
Like, I mean, not that we normally don't think, but, you know, like, it just
gave
us...
normally.
Right. I usually have to poke and prod you a little bit
when
on
you have
that
three kids in the house, like, who thinks?
No, you think, you just can't hear it. Like, you can't hear the
so
thoughts.
Then you just give up thinking.
I was surprised at how much time I had to reflect on things, like, or to notice things over the course of three or four campgrounds that I
hadn't
noticed.
That's what it was, I think, stacking up seven campgrounds, and you start to really think about what do we like, what do we not like. So we're going to break this into two parts. We want to talk about a lot of the things that we reflected on about campgrounds and what we love or don't love about campgrounds and lessons learned, kind of. And then we'll come back. We want to talk about things we learned about our family in terms of traveling 34 nights on the road. So let's talk about campgrounds. Let's talk about American campgrounds and what we learned. You were thinking a lot about aesthetics, about what you liked aesthetically and what you didn't like, because we stayed at such a wide variety of campgrounds,
we
from
did.
Really small ones to resorts to whatever.
To mountains, to beaches, to in between, like a lot of variety.
From the mountains to the sea. So it got you really thinking about what works for you in terms of aesthetics and what about landscaping.
Okay. So what I started to notice, and I think it wasn't until Campground 5 that I...
Campground 5.
It was like it hit me. I realized there were times when I felt... so relaxed at a campground. Like, I had those moments where I was just like, oh, this is so nice.
And it wasn't just because the kids were behaving or I was, you know, massaging your back and you had a cocktail in your hand or whatever.
All right. So there were, you know, and I was like, wait a minute. What is it that's keeping me from, like, feeling that way at this particular moment, right? So I started to really notice how much, and I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but it really jumped out at me, that landscaping and aesthetics matter so much to people's campground experience. And here's what happens in a home. Have you ever left something out on a table forever?
Yes.
And what happens?
Well, you pick it up and yell at me.
No, you stop seeing it, right? Something
I don't
stays
see it
in
to
a
begin
one
with.
Place
right.
all the time.
And it becomes part of the landscape.
It just becomes part of
right.
the thing. You almost stop thinking about it. That happens all the time in houses, right? Now, campground owners, I wonder if that doesn't happen to them a little bit, right? They've been there forever.
And they're busy, and things are hectic.
Yeah, and there's a lot of work to do as a campground owner.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when a new person comes in, when a guest comes in, you might not
see that dumpster.
You notice
that misplaced
dumpster.
Hose or the dump, yeah, the dumpster that's in your sight
in
line.
In your sight line, right?
Right.
But you know what? The person who's pulling into that campsite does, and or at least many of us do.
And it affects you either directly. Like, you know, for me, it's I think it does affect me, but it's like more subconscious. For you, it's very directly.
I notice it. So I was noticing, like, at one campground early on in our trip, beautiful pool, okay? Everything that
like,
would...
Like, magnificent pool.
Well, everything that would make you feel super, like, resorty, right?
And yeah, and let's just say it was the Cherokee KOA, which we loved.
Yeah, and I had so much... time in that hot tub that I was enjoying. I really relaxed in the hot tub and just enjoyed myself. And there was like a section in between the hot tub and the regular pool. And it was like the maintenance little section.
Right.
And it had unwrapped hoses and sort of like a couple of random pool.
Yeah, and just the type of stuff
items.
That when you're working hard and working fast, doesn't get taken care of.
Yeah, or you may stop noticing it. But you know, when I'm sitting there in that hot tub and I've got mountains all around me and a beautiful pool and really rustic looking buildings, like their buildings there fit the landscape very nicely.
Yeah.
And then there's like this heap of pool equipment in front of my face.
Yeah.
It really was
and
there.
And frankly, you wouldn't see that at a high-end hotel, right? You just would never see that. Now, this was a high-end campground.
Yeah.
This was a resort campground that had all kinds of amazing things about it. it. But then in that one way, it was just like not totally taken care of.
Yeah, and I think that those little things popped up a lot on our travels where I just noticed, like, if you have people that you're situating the fire ring by the neighbor's hookups.
Yeah, that's a huge problem.
You've got
all
to
over
do
the
something
place.
With
yeah.
the landscaping. I can't believe that campground owners still have not.
That may be one of the biggest aesthetic things that we care about.
Yes.
Nobody likes to be looking at hookups when you're having a campfire.
Yeah.
We've pulled into sites and you're like, I'm not going to have a campfire tonight. You're like, you will not do it. Because
I don't have campfires looking at
now
people's sewer
you
hoses.
Also started to think about fences and pool fences.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a pool at every campground we went to,
mm-hmm.
and they all had different types of fencing. So what did you like about the fencing at certain campgrounds, and
so
what didn't
course,
you like at others?
Some campgrounds now have the fencing that is the white or the black, right, rods that go down all the way around, the straight up and down, the vertical poles, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very nice looking. It's very clean
It's clean.
But the thing about the white and the black and the straight lines is that it doesn't mess up your view. You know?
But yet it
You've
still looks
mountains.
Like a real fence and not something that's rinky-dink.
Well, yeah. It blends a little bit, okay? It doesn't get in the way of you enjoying the mountains and the blue sky or whatever it is. Well, then I realized, like, it was Campground 6 that
Campground
I went.
Campground 6.
This pool, I realized I was not enjoying myself as much at the pool.
Chain link fence.
And I was like, wait a minute. When I look around, this pool is actually nicer.
It's a really big
some
pool.
Of the
and
other
the
pools.
Pool with kiddie pool.
And it had the kiddie pool.
It was clean. It was well kept.
The fact that there was this huge chain link fence surrounding it just made me feel like I was in a backyard, not in beautiful mountains,
which we were.
At a really nice pool at a resort campground.
Yeah, so. And I mean, look, I'm not a master of fence pricing, but I don't think there's that dramatic of a difference in the pricing. A chain link fence is probably cheaper.
I think that there is enough of a price difference that campground owners, I think, look, we don't want to sound, for campground owners that listen, we don't want to sound like
oh, you should just do this and do that.
This,
we know it all costs money.
What we're doing is talking about the things that make a difference in you experiencing that total, I love this campground.
We're talking about things tonight that I think are attainable fixes
mm-hmm.
for campground owners. And look, Stephanie and I are learning a lot about the economics of the campground industry. And there are thin margins for mm-hmm. campground owners. We're learning that. We know that. And campground owners work incredibly hard to make their living. And so we don't want to be flip about it. Like, oh, just install this. Like, we would never say, like, you need a huge water slide to make your campground great. Like, we don't think that way.
We don't think it, yeah.
But we do like to think about the small things, okay? You also were talking a lot about campground furniture and pool furniture. What were your thoughts there?
It goes along in the same category. The campgrounds that we stayed at that had, instead of the seating that had the plastic strips across it, that had the more solid, like, vinyl chairs around, or the ones with the mesh that dry really quickly.
As opposed to the furniture that looks like it's from, like, Kmart.
Yeah. And the difference in my comfort level around the pool, I think the Great Smoky Jellystone, they had that really great mesh furniture around the pool.
Right.
So when you go to sit down, you're not sitting in a wet chair that somebody else had, you know, gotten wet before they left, because it dries very quickly. It also looks nicer. It's more comfortable. You truly relax.
And again, we would recommend the Cherokee KOA to anyone. The pool area and hot tub area was magnificent, but then this camp furniture, just like it didn't match the rest of the environment.
No.
And that's the cheapest thing to fix.
Yeah.
It's not like we're saying you need a better pool.
Yeah.
They have an amazing pool. They have this whole amazing area back there. And it honestly looks like you're at a resort hotel.
Mm-hmm.
If I just dropped you off, if I blindfolded you and brought you there, you wouldn't think you're at a campground.
And I felt the same way that about picnic tables and things like that. Just put a nice picnic table on my site. Now, I had also recently read an article in an industry newspaper that was by a campground owner talking about how they buy their furniture from this higher priced quality purveyor. And they're just like, I don't even think about the price difference because this stuff is going to last forever.
And
they're going to replace
everything. As consumers, we all know that. And you and I have bought cheap outdoor furniture. Yeah. Shamefully, we have. And it does not last. No. You're lucky to get a couple seasons out of it, then you're buying it again. Mm-hmm. So for a campground owner, it's the same thing as for the private consumer. You just sometimes got to spend a little more and know that you're going to get paid back over the long term.
But people in RVs don't travel with a lot of their own furniture. So the furniture that you provide is what we're using all day long. And I think
because we're outside so much.
Yeah, and I think
what
it
a great
matters.
Point.
So. All right, what's next?
again, kind of carrying on the theme of small things that matter a lot. Now, let's talk about amenities for the kids. We stayed at the Jellystone Marion, which was as kid-friendly as a campground can be in terms of their activities, their amenities, the water slide. They have a super-duper triple-looper water slide, which is like a theme park water slide.
It
was awesome. Mm-hmm. It was fast. I went on it 50 times. The boys went on it 100 times. And you would think that was their favorite thing at the campground, right? That it's got this huge water slide. Okay. The Jellystone Marion also has Gaga Ball.
Yeah.
Now, Gaga Ball requires a Gaga Ball pit, which is just a couple wood slats in a circle.
It looks like a playpen.
It looks like just a playpen, larger playpen filled with play sand.
Mm-hmm.
It probably costs a couple hundred dollars to build a Gaga Ball pit.
Right. I think that we could put one. We have been asked...
We could build one,
in the backyard
for a couple hundred
bucks.
They're
begging. I would think
and then
get
you
one
need
in
a ball for $5.
Yeah.
Okay? On our way out of Jellystone Marion, I asked Max, my son, what his favorite thing about the campground was. It was Gaga Ball.
Yes.
It was not the super duper triple looper water slide, which is infinitely more expensive, requires insurance that is more expensive. Yeah. It was the El Cheapo Gaga Ball pit.
Now, let me add this. The Gaga Ball pit would not have been so popular had it just sat there vacant all week. The owners do a very smart and I think affordable thing. They have their camp workers who are phenomenal.
They all have
there.
Handles there. So Nitro runs the Gaga Ball pit.
But just one time a day.
For half an hour.
At a half hour.
I think
11
it was from 11 to 11:30. Nitro is at the Gaga Ball pit. He runs organized games there, and he teaches the kids how to play.
Yep.
It's not a complicated game, but our kids didn't know how to play Gaga Ball when they showed up.
Mm-hmm.
So he teaches them how to play. After half an hour, Nitro leaves and moves on to his next thing. But the amazing thing is the kids keep playing all day because they've been taught how to play. The camp store lets them use a ball.
Mm-hmm.
If they run in and say, hey, can we have a ball for Gaga Ball? They can get one.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps the kids occupied all day long, and they love it.
It's a really great way for kids that don't know each other to get pickup games together and all be on the same page or something. Because that's hard. Like, sure, kids can play at the playground together. But six kids of varying ages that don't know each other to be able to play an organized game together, that's tricky. Well, they were doing it at the Gaga Ball pit. And the ages varied from, I would say, 4 to 11, 12.
Yeah.
There was older kids.
And in that same category, the Cherokee KOA had the gigantic checker set. Okay, which, that is got to be not even a couple hundred bucks. And it takes up a small amount of real estate, not even the size of a site, to put in a gigantic checker set. Our boys played for hours.
Yeah.
Right, so campground owners that are listening, and we know we do have campground owners listening, most of you are not going to put in huge water slides. It's cost prohibitive. There's insurance. There's all kinds of issues.
It's not even the first thing I look at when we're looking.
Yeah, but there are things that you can put in for a couple hundred bucks, if you're smart about it, that kids will love, and it'll become the favorite part of their campground experience. The next thing, okay, as we went from campground to campground, we've said this before on the show, we love it when either the owners or the managers are visible, when they are present, when they are meeting the campers, talking to the campers, and you just know they're there, as opposed to a campground where it's like, who's the manager? Who's the owner?
I'm not sure that I ever felt like I needed that to be happy at a campground. I'm not like, oh, I need to know who the owner or the manager is.
It can sound prissy or something.
In order to be at the campground. I don't want it to come across like that. What I noticed was, usually the campgrounds that I feel like are really tight and have really great customer service and are clean and comfortable, those are the ones that owners and managers are present and running around a lot.
Yeah.
And the campgrounds that we've kind of felt a little like, ooh, this is rough around the edges. This needs a little work.
You don't
work.
See the manager or the owner.
Those are the people that I think, honestly, this is what I think happens. They're buried in the office. Or like, you know, yes. Like I can only yep. imagine how much work it is. And I am sure that those owners end up like dealing with that back.
And they're not visual. They're not doing a constant visual inspection of their campground.
Yeah.
And look, we know this isn't easy. I don't want to be a campground manager and I don't want to be a campground owner because I don't want to have to work that hard.
Nope.
And I know how hard they work. And I want to give them a big shout out right now because this whole magical experience of RVing would not happen without people who are willing to be, to take risk and be entrepreneurs mm-hmm. and open campgrounds or manage them. But we don't, our last stay was at the Myrtle Beach KOA. And we love the manager there, right? Mm-hmm. Jeremiah Drew is just like a model of what a great manager is. And it's like you think there's five of him running around the campground.
Yeah.
We saw him mowing the lawn.
He was mowing the lawn.
We see him socializing with campers. We see him working in the office, but then you also see him on every part
He's
of the campground.
Yeah.
He's everywhere. It's crazy.
And I had a moment that really hit me while I was basking in the sun by the side of the pool at Marion, where just, I would say 15 to 20 minutes earlier, I had been having a conversation with the owner, Mama Bear, one of the owners. It's a
Mama
family
Bear
operation.
Was awesome.
Mama Bear was sitting there talking to us, giving us great recommendations for local hikes. Like, she was just telling us exactly what we could do in the area. Great conversation. So anyway, she went away. We went to the pool. I'm lying there by the pool and I look over and I saw Mama Bear sweeping the steps and the porch in front of the camp store.
Right.
Like, you know, she's not too good to pick up a broom. And there she is and she's sweeping. Now, I just think that that sets a tone for a camper. I'm like, oh, that's why all of the camp workers here are just all about the customer experience, because you have an owner who's willing to say, oh, better sweep
and
off those stairs.
We're going to have an interview with her son, Running Bear, later yeah. in the show, and we're going to talk a lot about customer service because yeah. They had such great customer mm-hmm. service. Paved roads for our next topic here. You really loved the campgrounds yeah. with paved roads. And again, we know it's an expense, but it makes a big difference to families. Why?
Well, I think it makes a big difference to me. I'm not sure that's universal. It's just something that I noticed for myself. I love biking at campgrounds, and I realized that the campgrounds that have the paved roads, my kids are on their scooters. I'm on my bike all the time. I love to ride the baby, you know, the toddler around on the bike. And
oh, Wes loves his bike ride before
right.
bedtime.
So that's just a good experience for me. I realize that I do that much less at campgrounds that don't have the paved roads. Now, I'm not saying that that is something that all campground owners should do, because I understand that has a lot to do with the topography of
sure.
the campground and sort of like where they're at and the weather and how the maintenance would be
right.
on that. But I just personally had never realized that, because I think, you know, after a 12-day trip, you go home and you didn't realize, oh, I missed riding my bike so much. It wasn't long enough. But on this trip, we actually went to quite a few campgrounds
that either did or
that were
didn't.
Not bike friendly.
Yeah.
And so then all of a sudden we got
to
one.
Oh, I can't take Wes on his evening bike ride.
Yeah. And I got to one and I was like, oh, I love this. So
yeah,
it
look,
like
last
hit a
week,
switch with me.
Last week we raved about the Great Smoky Jellystone mm-hmm. in Cosby, Tennessee. And I said, top five campground ever. The only thing I could even fathom complaining about that campground, and the complaining is not even the right word, is they didn't have paved roads.
It's just something that we didn't particularly like. It's hard to get the entire checklist in any one campground.
Impossible.
Perhaps. I don't think it ever happens, right?
The last of our sort of campground reflections is that we both love comfortable communal gathering places at campgrounds. And to every campground owner out there, this is not expensive to add mm-hmm. some kind of community fire pit or just some kind of area with some porch, with some chairs and some tables. And when we went to campgrounds that had these communal areas, we used them and we loved them.
And I think a lot of other people used them too. I think people look for a place outside of their own campsite that they can feel comfortable at various times, depending on their family. Like whether it's in the morning when there's the one early riser and they like to go and get their coffee
sure.
and read their paper somewhere away from the camper or whatever, or just to get a different view because it is a small space in the
You're
RV.
You're in that small RV.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so nice.
And also I would say that there has to be places that like demonstrate sort of that view from the campground, right? Like, your campsite is not going to necessarily offer the best, right?
Yeah.
Like, view of that campground has to offer. But if you put really comfortable, like, picnic tables or Adirondack chairs, it doesn't have to be a big space.
I loved the Fancy Gap KOI, both their indoor and outdoor community gathering spaces where campers would come. I would play checkers with the boys. We met a lot of other campers there. Mm-hmm. Campers are social people. They like to meet each other. Mm-hmm. And if you create a space where they can meet each other, they will. And when campers are meeting each other and meeting new friends, they're having a better experience at your campground, right? So I think those are important to add those spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
I think that was
so we'll be back in a second. And we're going to talk about some reflections about what it was like traveling as a family for 34 nights on the road. So we'll be back in 1 second. Four nights.
Yeah, we're doing it again.
Seven campgrounds, four states. I think we learned some things about our family, too, in terms of how we travel.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing you wanted to talk about was keeping the RV clean as opposed to keeping a house clean. We're back in our home, in our sticks and bricks home, and it's quite a contrast, isn't it?
It is, and it's very hard adjustment for me every time we get back. Not because I'm not happy to be home, because I definitely am, and there's so many
benefits. So you just answered the teaser question at the beginning of the podcast. Is this operation going full-time? And we know it's not for us. You know, we love to travel. We love to RV. Mm-hmm. We are going to hit like 50 nights in the RV, mm-hmm. 60 nights in the RV this year is even possible. So we love it, but we do love coming home as well.
Yeah.
And we love the balance between the two. We're trying to find the balance.
Right. And I think that that's definitely true for me. And it's always a question of mine. I'm always open to kind of what I'm going to feel like in a new experience. And I think that during this trip, there were many, many times where I looked at the situation, especially maybe when we had settled in somewhere for a little while and I liked it so much. And I would think, okay, could I do this with my kids? Because everybody's happy right now, you know? And the answer ultimately for me is no. I do like my community. I do like coming back home. I love having a home to come back to.
And when you come back to your house, we have a modest house.
Mm-hmm.
It feels gigantic. Yeah. It feels spacious. It's amazing how it feels to walk into
the
home.
But it is always an adjustment for me. So because there is so much stuff. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot as RVers is organization. People are always saying, RVs are so messy. RVs are so messy. How do I keep it neat? And that's totally true. But this trip, it put a spin on it for me. And I was like, wait a minute. RVs are really messy, but they also get cleaned up real fast. Like,
and that's such a nice part of it, because we'd be like, it'd be like 5 o'clock at night. We'd be like, okay, let's do a quick cleanup.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go outside and do a cleanup. You'd do an inside cleanup, whatever.
Yeah.
And in half an hour, everything was great.
Yeah. And we were totally comfortable for the rest of the evening. Didn't feel
and
like
it just
the
shows
day
you
had
that
gotten
a simpler life, a life with fewer belongings, is easier to clean up.
Yeah. And so I was perfectly content with the amount of stuff we had for 34 days.
And
so
we kind of packed for a week. We just did laundry.
No. Yeah. And it was hard for me to come home and to grapple with the amount of stuff we have in our house. And I'm not a pack rat, but I'm still like, I don't need all this. But then at the same time, it's just as overwhelming to think about getting rid of anything. Like,
right.
So that is something that RVing does for me. It really creates this sense
simplicity.
Yes. Love the simplicity of the amount of stuff we have when we RV.
Yeah.
So.
Now, the second thing that we reflected on a lot was 34 nights on the road too many for us as a family, particularly for our young kids.
Mm-hmm.
We have 6-year-old twins and a 2-year-old. And I think that a lot of our listeners and a lot of people that follow what we're doing are probably wondering, like, I mean, people asked us, mm-hmm. you know, how did the boys do?
Mm-hmm.
How did the kids do? And we're constantly asking ourselves that question when we travel. Is this too much? Is this good for them? Is it not good for them? And they were troopers, man.
Yeah.
There was not one mention of going home until day 31 or 32 of 34, one of the boys said, I'm ready to go home.
Yeah.
And at that point, we couldn't just pick up and leave. You know,
we had a day that we were going home.
We knew we were going on like 48 hours. Yeah. Okay, he wants to go home. He wants to see grandma. He wanted new books and he wanted to see some of his toys that were back at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, that's amazing. He went 32 nights. Now, the other older boy could have kept going and going. Mm-hmm. He was like, he wanted to go to the next campground.
Right.
And Wes forgot what home was.
He did.
Wes on the way home was like, campground.
He was so used to the routine of packing up and going to a new campground. It's amazing how two-year-olds adjust. Like, he was just ready to go to the new campground. And we kept saying, well, we're going home. And he kind of got this confused look on his face. Now, the thing that breaks my heart is the hardest thing for him.
He's back in his own nursery. He's not
room.
Sleeping in the bunkhouse with Max and Thea.
Watching him the last few nights.
He looked a little heartbroken.
He wanted to be in the room with them.
He
says, are Max and Theo going to bed?
But the boys might be sharing a room soon anyway. Might be switching things up around here.
I've said that since day one. I grew up in a family where
we all sleep
together. And you know what? These three boys slept so nice together
in
the bunkhouse the whole month.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute. They enjoy
being in this space together. Yeah.
So
in terms of, is 34 nights too many? I do think that we almost pushed it too far. And I think that if we had kept going, we would have been dealing with some serious homesickness from the boys. I felt like we were about to turn that corner.
For me too. I was ready to see my friends.
And I think that when we got home, they were so excited to be home and they wanted to see grandma and they wanted to
see their friend and that friend. We had a pool date that day.
I think it was a little bit too long.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons we did stay on the road that long is we're writing a book.
Yeah.
We've said that before. And we hit our stride working on the road at the last campground. And we just thought, man, it's easier to be writing at a campground where the boys have a lot of things to do.
We didn't want to lose pace. Like, we were doing really
and
good.
So we just kept going.
Changing up the operation is going
to So we're not going to be writing a book every summer. God, I would love to be writing a book every summer, actually, now that I think about
not,
it.
Not on this kind of thing.
But I, in general, I think for us, and I'm not judging any other family. I'm not judging any full-time family or any, every family is different. For us, I feel like it was a pinch too far, a pinch too long.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. So the next thing we wanted to talk about, downtime is really good for kids.
Yeah.
Right. Because we were at campgrounds where there was like nonstop activities, like literally scheduled activities. And then we were at places where the boys had to make their own fun. And you really believe that downtime is good for them and time where they have to invent their own play.
Oh, yeah.
And even I wouldn't
say
they got bored.
That's my whole education background. I really believe in kids having to think of things to do and not always be given organized activities. So, yes, that's part of what I believe in. Now, here's the problem, and I'm not sure what the solution is to this. For us as parents, it's nice to go from a super fun campground to a downtime campground that's a little quieter, a little more laid back. Super fun, quieter, a little more laid back.
And we kind of did that. Not quite intentionally, really, but it worked out that way.
But I think for the kids, that's a little hard because they're constantly adjusting to their expectations in a campground.
When they're at a campground where there's activities on the hour and then they go to one that doesn't have that, it was a struggle a little
bit.
They were
like, they wanted to know
what was on the list. And it's like, no,
like,
you need to make up.
Get on your scooter or go to the playground, whatever. But they had been, they were like, so used to at that point.
Yeah.
They were in that mode of activity.
So there's a couple days of struggling to get them back into the swing of things.
Yeah.
But then as soon, the secret recipe here was as soon as they met a couple of friends at the campground, they were good to go.
Yeah. Our boys.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, when one of them became homesick, it was because one of the kids he became friendly with left for home.
Yeah.
We were at the last campground at the Myrtle Beach KOA for 11 days.
Yeah.
Okay, so at one point we remarked, like, no one around us was here when we pulled in.
Yeah.
So when one of the boys had a friend leave, it was like, oh, I want to go home too, which made all the sense in the world, right?
You know that boy? He gave Max directions to his house at the
playground.
Oh,
that is adorable.
I watched them, you know, he was saying goodbye, and he was telling Max he lives in Gettysburg, and he was telling him how to go past the big, like, the big building. And, like, keep going, and it's going to become, like, a country road, and you're going to see my house. Like, he was telling Max how to get to his house in Gettysburg.
Oh, too much.
Just sit back, and you have those moments as a parent. You're like, this is the most adorable thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Look, it was such precious time as a family. You know, it really was. And I'm so proud of the kids and how they comported themselves. In terms of the big picture, we did deal with naughty behavior. And we're going to do a podcast on naughty behavior because we saw all different types of naughty campground behavior, right? So the next thing, we really realized the boys like different types of campgrounds mm-hmm. than we like. Now, we can all be happy at the same campground, and we are. But if they were to pick the campground, it would look different than the ones we would pick.
Absolutely.
How so?
I think that, okay, yeah, they're 6 and 2. So, of course, their tastes are different than our adult tastes. But it's interesting as parents to watch your children develop tastes and preferences and to think about how that's going to impact your family life in the future. So, again, I'm just like, okay, this is good for me to think about. I realize about my children watching them at campgrounds, they are extremely social. They really like to meet new kids. They like to play with new kids. They like activities. And even though I might have some ideal for my children of being like off in the woods playing with sticks and pine cones instead, if that's what they really enjoy, then that's
more
okay.
Power to them.
Yeah. And I'm going to do as much as I can as a parent. I think that they're becoming really great travelers. And you know what? I want to support that. Like what they enjoy.
Right. So we might love some state park in the wilderness where you can't even see the next site.
Yeah.
Okay. But they want to be at a bustling, active family campground.
Yeah.
With
or
lots
we're
going to
find magical places that meet in the middle like we did at the
Great Smoky Mountain Jellystone.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. That's what we're going to have
to do.
That's
right. Mm-hmm. Now, we traveled from the mountains to the sea. Spent, 12 days in Great Smoky Mountain National Park. We worked our way all the way back to the Atlantic Ocean. What did you learn about your preference? Do you like camping in the mountains? Or do you like camping at the beach? We go back and forth on this for years.
There's no answer to this.
Really?
I realized this summer that having been born a beach girl, raised on the beach, all my life I spent going to the beach all day. Like, we were the kind of family you would go to the beach at 9 a.m. and leave at 5 p.m. I never imagined that lakes and streams would be something that I would spend my time in the summer. And now, after so many summers we've spent in the mountains, we spend time in the mountains every summer for the past 5 summers. I think I prefer to be in the mountains in the summer.
That's a surprise because we didn't confer about this beforehand. I'm surprised you're saying that. So on air right now, you're hearing this live. My wife has surprised me. I will still take beach camping.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like I can't believe I'm saying it because I love hiking, right? I love hiking in mountains. And when you go beach camping, you're not really hiking. And that's one of my favorite things to do. But nothing beats hearing the sound of breaking waves from your campsite
and falling asleep to
the sound of the ocean. Nothing compares to that for me. Nothing ever will.
Like I would rather be listening to the creek rush by the campground.
Oh my gosh. Can we still stay together?
And then
together?
And then jumping in the ocean after a time in the mountains is like coming home. So, you know,
they're both awesome. So, right, so why do you have to
pick one
or the other? You have an RV, you can do both.
I'm not picking.
Okay. So we'll be back in a second with an interview with Running Bear, one of the co-owners of the Jellystone in Marion in North Carolina. We spent 5 days there towards the end of our trip, and we were incredibly impressed with a very high level of customer service that I don't know that we'd ever seen before, and also just incredible activities mm-hmm. scheduled for the kids. It was amazing. So we're going to focus this interview on those two things and talk about what they're doing right in those departments. So welcome back to the show, everybody. We're excited to be here with Alex Garcia, a.k.a. Running Bear, one of the three owners of the Jellystone Marion. How are you doing, Alex?
Doing great.
I'm sorry, Running Bear.
Running Bear. Yeah, you have to get used to the handles around
here. Everyone has a handle here at Jellystone Marion.
I think my favorite is Twinkle Toes.
Twinkle
Toes. Twinkle Toes. No, Twinkle
there is
Toes.
A twink- is she right about that? I have not met Twinkle Toes.
Yeah.
She's a dancer.
Makes sense.
That's a shock. We'll talk more about handles
because
built into this conversation. Give us a little bit of the history of the campground.
Yeah, I guess my parents picked up the park about 8 years ago.
Okay.
And they came from hotels. Working in hotels, Marriott and Ritz-Carlton and St. Regis hotels.
Okay.
And but the family dream was always to get a campground. And we were all in different places.
Mm-hmm.
I was pursuing my undergrad down in Miami. My brother was at William & Mary. my dad was doing the commute into D.C., and my mom was doing the commute into D.C. and traveling four or 5 days out of the week. And so we're all in different places. And so this campground brought us all together. So my brother Happy Feet, he is like our activities guy. Mama Bear is, she leads the details of the operation.
She's a logistics lady. Let me tell you
something. Not only that, she's quite theatrical. Yeah. We're going to talk about that more in a minute, too. Yeah. I thought she would have a theater background.
All right. And what's your...
And then, my dad is operations. Anything that breaks, he's the one that fixes it.
Okay.
And, you know, me, myself, I'm more the sales, marketing, customer service guy.
Sitting here with us in the microphone.
Yeah, we have a full team here.
Yeah.
Now, we'll come back to customer service, but I'm so interested in the fact that you guys came from, or your parents came from the hotel industry. That explains so much to me in terms of how excellent the customer service is at this campground.
And you're not the first campground owner that we've talked to that has a history in the hotel industry. And that's such, you know, that's really a fascinating switch. Like maybe some people are trying to get a different pace, like the same sort of hospitality industry, but a different pace of life, or a different view.
So we'll circle back to customer service, but that was very interesting, and it does explain a lot. What do you like about being a Jellystone franchise? What do you like about working with Leisure Systems? Because you guys seem to have fully embraced the model.
Sure.
So why is that?
I think it just, you know, it embodies family. You know, that's the biggest thing is, you know, family was at the core of what we wanted to do. You know, bringing people. One, you know, the great thing about a campground in general is that it's just it's a natural environment, right? And so with Jellystone, it's the activities and just, it's kind of funny. It's just like, I don't know, it brings people to the park, but then it's, the activities are great and keeps the kids engaged and it creates those memories and stuff, but it also, I don't know, pulls people away from technology. You know, they're away from the iPhones and the iPads and, you know, they're together. You know, they're in the
moment. If we offered our boys the option to either watch a movie at the RV or go play Gaga Ball, I know what the answer would be. It would be Gaga Ball, which they didn't know how to play three days ago, and now they're experts.
They're ready to go pro.
Yeah.
And a big shout out to Nitro, one of the camp workers was awesome. So let's talk staff.
Yeah.
You have a really dynamic staff here with all of their different handles.
And I would like to say a young staff.
A young staff.
These are young, what a lot of people would call kids, right? And so many people out there right now in this day and age talk about the younger generation not having manners, not knowing, you know, how to conduct themselves in a professional environment. These look like college-age kids to me, mostly.
And they're sharp.
Holy moly, are they
and
nice with these
kids. It's not just that. It's also, they're like... entertainment.
Yeah.
They're part of the entertainment package here, and every single one of them has been boisterous and fun.
So we want to know.
What's the secret sauce here?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you guys do to get this young staff just like to be part of the action here?
Yeah, I think a big thing for us is just finding kids and people that really care. That is the biggest thing in our interview process is we actually use an interview process that deals with that emotional EQ versus IQ.
Okay.
And it's something that was developed by Ritz-Carlton and we kind of brought it here.
Oh, very interesting.
And it's just, you know, if they have that emotional coefficient, we feel like we can train them on everything else, on the details, because they're people that really care and they're like, hey, I want to meet Theo and I want to, you know, play with Wesley and, you know, and they really care about that.
Yeah.
And at least a bunch of them have been coming back now for several years. I've met a few of them that said, this is my third year, fourth year, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So they like working here as well,
I was actually working in the car yesterday down by your camp stage while he was playing with the kids. I was typing on the computer, getting a little work done.
Yeah.
And I watched one of your camp workers, Lil Foot, have the most like engaged, respectful conversation with a 10-year-old. I mean, the boy must have been 10, and he had an issue. He had missed some activity, and she was sitting there telling him, no, we're going to have it tomorrow, and it'll be this time, and I'll make sure, you know, you get to be involved. And she might as well have been having a conversation with any kind of guest out there, any paying adult, but it was with a child, and that just blew me away.
I was kind of floored by the greeting we received when we checked in. By Barracuda and, oh my gosh.
Is it Tinkerbell?
Tink. We call her Tink on Running Bear.
We're on
maybe,
a nickname
maybe
basis
for you it's Tinkerbell.
Tink.
We call her Tink. you know, we went to check in, and it was like a comedy routine with the two of them at the front desk. And I was thinking, this could be a television show.
Yeah. Or a podcast.
Or a podcast. And I have to be honest, for a few minutes, I was thinking we would just interview them.
Yeah. We were going to put you to the side and just interview
you. That's awesome.
Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
So tell us about, you do themed weeks here, right? Sure. So every week revolves around a theme. What's this week's theme? And then maybe tell us a couple of your more popular themed weekends, or weeks, rather.
We're at, I think this is the Jellyopolis 500.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
right?
Yes it is.
Get your engines ready. So this is one where we have our mechanic shop and our boxcar races and all that kind of stuff. Wet and Wild Week is a super popular one. Our Halloween's book a year in advance, you know, Haunted House, trick-or-treating, costume contest.
And those run throughout October,
Yeah, we have 5 weekends of those.
And so is every week here a themed week, or is there a season for the themed weeks?
Yeah, every week is themed.
Every week is themed. That's a pretty high-octane environment, right?
Do you spend your winter or, like,
do you hibernate?
Yeah.
Do you hibernate during the winter?
Yeah. Okay. We need some hibernation.
Now, within your...
It's exhausting.
Within your themed weeks, there's so many activities here, and there's no way we can talk about all of them on the podcast. What are some of the things that maybe you love or that seem to be, like, the most popular with the kids in terms of the daily activities?
Daily activities, I would say things like the water wagon. That's a really cool one.
Right.
You know, get the kids out. And the DJ dance parties are something that my dad and I, Chief, and I actually compete in. We alternate DJing experiences. So
and who typically wins?
Well, I'd have to say Running Bear.
You know, okay.
Of course he won.
But he would say the contrary, you know.
But he's not here.
He's not here, you know, to say it. But,
so we believe you.
We believe you.
We're taking your word
You know,
for
we
it.
Go, we go, you know, I lived in Miami for, you know, 4 years as part of the South Beach scene. So, you know, we had to bring some of that, you know, to Jellystone.
Oh, South Beach meet
some
Marion.
South Beach to Marion.
Main Street Marion.
Again, like the, hotel background, that explains a lot.
Yeah. Right.
That
style.
Makes a lot of sense. Now, the activity that I did last night with Max and Theo, I really think it was the single best campground activity I've done in 5 years of RVing.
Yeah, you were like talking to me in whisper voices about it last night.
Because they
night.
Came back like, and they conked out. They were tired, you know.
Yeah.
But so tell us about Tuck and Tails. What is that about?
Yeah, Tuck and Tails is something that Mama Bear created. It's an experience with I don't know. It's like you tell stories, you know, you're putting yoga.
Improvised stories.
Improvised stories. It's a tale. What was the tale about?
It was about Yogi and Jellyopolis and him racing around, eating picnic baskets, crashing. And the kids were involved in improvising in the story.
Right. So the kids get on a wagon.
They get on a wagon.
And they go all the way to the back of your campground to, like,
well,
a
kind of up
house?
The side of the hill there.
Yeah.
Now, the campground's much bigger than it looks, by the way, right?
Yeah.
So we go up on top of the hill there on a hayride. And then Yogi's hiding behind the treehouse.
I think one of our kids spotted Yogi.
Yeah, Theo
first,
spotted
right?
Yogi.
And,
like, screaming.
Started, like, yelling about Yogi having the cookies or something. Leave it to our kids, right? Yogi's got the cookies. Get up.
So then there was cookies and milk and story time around the campfire. And it was just kind of this lush, like, forest setting, a little bit spooky up there.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And, you know, we talk a lot about, we've actually had entire podcasts about what the campground does for kids, right?
Yeah.
And what we feel we're giving to our kids by, you know, engaging them in this kind of lifestyle.
Yeah.
And Jeremy told me that at the beginning, Mama Bear asked all the kids what they were thankful for.
At the end. At the,
right? Or at the end.
After
okay.
the story, she went around and asked every single kid what they were thankful for.
Right. And, you know, a lot of kids do that maybe once a year around the Thanksgiving table or something.
Yeah.
But I was like, wow, to bring that sort of end of the day in a community with a bunch of kids that our kids don't know, right?
Yeah.
Kind of making strangers.
It was very sweet.
Into a nice community.
And I have to say, Mama Bear, who is Running Bear's mom, correct?
Yeah.
To me, was the star of the show over Yogi. don't tell Yogi.
Our kids listen to this podcast. We're going to have to, like, turn down the volume.
I mean, Mama Bear, Mama Bear is an entertainer. She led that spontaneous story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the end, the kids all went and tucked Yogi in,
They all tucked Yogi in to bed at night up in the tree. The treehouse was very cool.
Yeah.
Now, Tell us about the future of the park, because there you do have some plans here, and it looks like you're adding sites and adding some different things. Can you tell us a little bit about what this Jellystone's going to look like in the next few years?
Yeah, we hope to add some more cabins, some more campsites, another pool, another amenity center in that upper section.
Oh, awesome.
And create some of those natural components that are out there.
Right, because it is sort of more of a mountain environment once you go up the hill there.
Yeah, that's our favorite part of the park, just because it really gets you in tune with nature. So you have, you know, the amenities, the water slide, the pool, everything down here, but then up there it's just kind of like, you know, your connection. You know, your connection with nature, so to speak. So we want to keep it very rustic in that space. So a lot of we might even do tree houses in that space.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow. So you can have different camping environments based on what your tastes are as a consumer.
Yeah.
So somebody that wants to be by the action could be right by the action down here by the lake.
Somebody that wants to be a
little more tucked around. If you want a more natural. Mm-hmm. And the sites up there are beautiful. The ones that you have now are really beautiful sites that are kind of carved into the side of the hill there.
Yeah.
Anything going on down there by the lake? It looks like there's also something going on down at the bottom.
Yeah, we are putting some more campsites down there right now. So our biggest focus, though, as we grow, is we don't want to grow too fast. You know, because as you guys have mentioned, service was really an outlier for you. And so for us, you know, we want to make sure that we can engage everybody.
Right.
It sounds like that's built into your plan, though, because you're not just talking about adding sites. You're talking about adding amenities to go along with the sites, right? So in other words, if someone is in one of those sites up the hill, they don't have to walk a mile to the pool. There's going to be another pool.
Right. Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
That sounds great. Well, we look forward to a return visit.
Best of luck to you.
Best of luck to you.
Because this is a really special place, and we've enjoyed
it. It is.
Time
and I have one more question.
Oh. Yeah.
So why are you called Running Bear?
Running Bear. Well, because when we started, my dad and I, we share the same name, Alex. And so when we would get radio calls, it was Alex. And we both go, you know, to location.
Right. And you showed up and something was broken, and you're like, I'm the marketing guy.
Yeah, I'm the marketing guy. I don't know. There is not any search engine optimization related to this.
There you go.
So we started there. So Chief, obviously being the big kahuna that he is, he's the chief. And I was the guy kind of running on, you know, doing the errands and the tasks and stuff. So Chief was sending me running. So I was running bear, you know, being a bear here at a Yogi Bear Park. So that's how everything kind of unfolded, and I also run, so that's Running Bear.
Yeah, I lied. I have one more question.
Okay. Yeah.
When we were in the camp store yesterday, I noticed a lot of awards from Leisure Systems.
Sure.
What are some of the awards that you guys have won out of the 80 Jellystone Parks or whatever the number is?
Sure.
There was a bunch of them up there.
Sure. Yeah. Outstanding customer service.
Well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Outstanding recreational program. Entrepreneur of the Year, Operator of the Year.
Website award?
Award.
Okay.
Yep.
Your website's gorgeous.
Thank you.
So for all our listeners, you know, head online and check them out at, what's the website address?
JellystoneMarion.com.
JellystoneMarion.com, and you'll get a look at all the amenities. We didn't even talk about the slide, the huge triple loop slide.
Right, but it's all there. Right,
the
and they have really nice pictures of it all and everything.
Yeah, check it all out online and consider booking a fun vacation for your family. Thank you so much, Running Bear.
Thank you.
Okay, have a great day.
Bye.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 46 of RVFTA, and thank you so much to Go RVing for sponsoring RVFTA. Head on over to GoRVing.com/RVFTA to find your way. And a big shout out to Keith and Tia Sims from Soulful RV Family. We had them on the show last week. We had a lot of comments on that interview.
Yes.
We really enjoyed that interview.
People emailed us.
And they launched their website this week. So head on over to
Soulful.
Congratulations, guys. It looks great. We really enjoyed reading the first couple of posts and enjoyed the pictures. And we look forward to all of your adventures on that website. So it's soulfulrvfamily.com, correct?
Yep.
All right, check out Keith and Tia Sims over there. A lot to learn.
And we'll talk to you next week.
We will talk to you next week. We'll talk to each other next week.
From the home
back in the home studio.